We live in an extremely blessed generation, and this is a generation where our grandparents, I think, would have given so much of themselves to be living in the times that we are. So last year, or 2 years ago, we celebrated the 50th anniversary of Yerushalayim being liberated. Was that only last year? It was 2 years ago. So that was an amazing celebration. But along with this incredible reality that we experience today, we also have a tremendous challenge, and that is the pasuk in Parshas Acharei Mos. The Torah says, "Vayomer Hashem al Moshe." You can look at the first entry. "Daber al Aaron achicha." Moshe Rabbeinu is instructed to tell his brother Aaron, "Al yavo b'chol eis el hakodesh," that he is not able to enter into the kodesh all the time. Ki be'anan era'eh el ha'kaporas. The Ribono Shel Olam, God says, because I will be there. My presence, my Shechina, will be there in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the question that you have to ask yourself is, if that's where God's presence is, if that's where His Shechina can be found, isn't that the place where Aaron HaKohen should be all the time? Why is Moshe Rabbeinu telling Aaron to be careful not to go there too often? So Rashi there explains very simply, Ki tamid ani nirasham im amud anani. I am always going to be present there in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Ulefi shegalu shchinasi sham. And because I am always going to be there, therefore, says Rashi, Yizaher shelo yargil lavo. Aaron has to be careful not to come too often. Because we all know what happens when we become used to something. We lose appreciation. We don't fully understand what it is that we are experiencing. So how many of us have children that we have raised? I'm still a young father. But for those of you who are a little bit older than I am, perhaps some in the room, or everybody, so you sometimes have children who become very accustomed to the luxury of everything that their parents provide them with in life. And children are not always as grateful as they should be. Some children. Many children, or most children. Why is that? It's not because they don't love their parents, and it's not because they don't appreciate what their parents do for them. It's because, lefi shegalu shchinasi sham, it's because since as a parent I am always there for you, you start to just take that as a given, that I will always be there for you, regardless of the circumstance, regardless of how much you hurt me, regardless of how disrespectfully you talk to me, I will always be there for you because I'm a parent, and that's what parents do. And that's exactly what Rashi tells us here. Aaron HaKohen was warned, and he is told, be careful not to come too often because you will lose that sense of appreciation if it doesn't remain fresh for you. If it's not something that you're going to feel every time you walk in is a new experience, you are going to lose the sensational feeling that you're supposed to have every time you encounter what it means to be in the presence of God. The Aruch Chaim HaKadosh has an amazing comment that he has on Chumash, in Shmos Perek Yutes. And there it is on the pasuk, Kos Omar LeBeis Yaakov V'Sagid LeVnei Yisrael. I didn't put it on here. But the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh has a stark criticism against Moshe Rabbeinu. Now this is something that we generally don't talk about too often. Moshe Rabbeinu did certain things that the pages in Chumash tell us were, on his level, mistakes. But the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh here points out that Moshe Rabbeinu had a different challenge, which is something that we may not have noticed, and that is, Bebechinas Ava, when a person is so deeply in love, so you have a couple who's been married for who knows how many years, and they have such a deep relationship with one another, and they have such a deep appreciation for one another. Sometimes, because they're so close, they feel that they have a license to say things that otherwise they would not have said 50 years prior. Right, so when a couple is dating, they're walking on eggshells. They're so careful of how they speak to one another, and they should be. And we should always be careful the way we speak to our spouses. But here writes the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, life sets in, and when you become so deeply in love with somebody, and when you become so connected to them, sometimes, he says, it causes a tzad goreim ra'a. Sometimes there's a negative consequence that comes in that. Ki lo taspik leba'aleha lihishamer bitmidus, Lebalavor is a pam be'akrai. It's impossible that at some point along the way in that relationship, I'm not going to make a mistake and say the wrong thing. I'm so close with you. I'm with you all the time. I can't always be on guard. And therefore, writes the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, this is exactly what happened with Moshe Rabbeinu. Mi Moshe Atalamed, the great Moshe Rabbeinu. There was nobody who was closer to God than him. And yet we're told by Moshe Rabbeinu, Ki litzad rov kurvaso v'chibaso im Hashem, because Moshe Rabbeinu had such a profoundly deep connection with God Himself, Shagag, writes the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, he made a terrible mistake. And Moshe Rabbeinu speaks almost disrespectfully to God. If God comes to you one night and He says, you know, I'd like you to do a mission for me. You don't ask questions. If you are sure that it's God. Now, maybe many of us have never had an experience with God, so we don't know that it would be Him. But Moshe Rabbeinu certainly knew that God was talking to him. How dare you respond to God and say, no, send somebody else. Shlach na biyad tishlach. It's not a job for me. I have this kind of problem and that issue, and I don't want to be the one. And maybe they're not going to trust me. Who are you to argue with Him? And says the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, you go later on in the pages of Chumash Parshas Kisisa, and there Moshe Rabbeinu says something almost, you would say, if somebody today would say such a thing, it would be an apikoros. What does Moshe Rabbeinu say? Lama harayosa la'amazeh. Why did you do such a terrible thing to the Jewish people? How do you talk like that? Says the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, how dare you? Lama harayosa la'amazeh. God has every right to respond to Moshe Rabbeinu. Why have I done evil to this people? Do you know what I've done positively for them? Do you not understand that I'm the one who sustained them all these years? I'm the only reason why they're still here? Writes the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh. Moshe Rabbeinu then goes further and he says, V'hatzeh lo hitzalto, you didn't save them and you didn't hear them and they were crying out to you and you ignored them. Says the Aruch Chaim, where does Moshe Rabbeinu come off to talk like that? And the answer he writes is, because of Godel Kirvasa Lefnei Hashem. Because of Moshe Rabbeinu's profound connection with God Himself, sometimes He spoke almost like it was His father. And sometimes, when we're so close to somebody, we speak to them as friends. I have friends who are great Talmidei Chachamim and great rabbis, and sometimes they see the way my father and I speak. I live in awe of my father. But in the end of the day, he is my father. So sometimes we talk the way children are supposed to talk to their parents. And sometimes my father and I disagree on certain things. Not that I'm smarter than him, but sometimes we have discussions and we talk about things. And my friends are sometimes looking at us and wondering, how can you talk that way? He's Rav Schechter. So it's true, he is, but it's Avinu Malkeinu. That's our relationship with God, is the relationship I have with my own father as well. Yes, you can live in awe of someone, but at some point, because you're so close to them, sometimes your way of speaking is a little bit different. And the relationship that you have might be different than the relationship that others have with that person. And therefore, says the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, we always need to be careful. When we become so accustomed to a person or something in life that is special, sometimes we can lack the sense of feeling, of appreciation, of respect that entity demands. And I mention this because this Sunday is Yom Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is the greatest gift of our times, the greatest gift of our generation. It's a dream. Hayinu kicholmim. Who would have thought that this would actually come true in our days? Who would think that we have this opportunity? And you read the stories about the great tzaddikim from the 1800s who used to stand on the roof of a certain building outside of the Chomos Yerushalayim and be able to see, if they put their glasses on with a magnifying glass and a telescope and whatever they used, they were able to see something that resembled the Har HaBayis and Makom HaMikdash, and they would pay everything for that. And yet we have the opportunity to jump on a plane whenever we want and to go visit, and yet you get there and you see that there are people talking on their phones and there are people taking selfies, and everyone's doing all kinds of things that our grandparents would just melt if they saw us acting in this way. And you see people eating, and there's garbage on the floor, and they drop their bottles, and you ask yourself, how can it be? It's not because we don't appreciate what Yerushalayim is. It's because we are so blessed that we have Yerushalayim. Same thing with the shul. We come to shul so often, and because of that, we lose the sense of appreciation that we're supposed to have for a shul. So yes, there are rules and regulations of how we're supposed to act and how we're supposed to behave. And yet we don't always live up to that expectation, unfortunately. It's not because we don't appreciate the fact that this is a shul, but it's because this is my home. I'm here all the time. And I don't fully appreciate the gift because I've become so accustomed to it. So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz writes, a very beautiful comment in explaining the pasuk in Sefer Yecheskel. Ubebo am ha'aretz lefnei Hashem b'moadim. Says the Navi in Sefer Yecheskel, when Am Ha'aretz, when all the people from all over the land would come to visit Yerushalayim, to visit the Beis HaMikdash on the Yamim Tovim, Haba derech shar tzafon lehishtachavos. If you walked in from this direction, the rule was you had to walk out of the Beis HaMikdash in the opposite direction. And that's what the Navi in Sefer Yecheskel describes to us. What is the reason for that? So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz quotes from the Chassid Yaivitz in his commentary on Pirkei Avos. Ki hikpid Hashem yizbarach shalo yira hashar shtei pa'amim. God wanted that when you come and visit the Beis HaMikdash, I want you to be overwhelmed. You're only going to come three times a year, shalosh pa'amim bashana. The rest of the year you have a job, you live out somewhere else. You're not able to be there all the time, and I want it to be special. How are we going to make sure that it's special? You know how? If you walk in this entrance and you're completely overwhelmed by what it is that you see, we're going to ask you to walk out a different exit. This way you'll be overwhelmed on the way out. Because if you walk out the same way you came in, you're going to say, oh, I saw this already. Not so exciting. Says the Chassid Yaivitz, even if you're in the Beis HaMikdash, even if you are Aaron HaKohen in the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom HaKippurim, even you need to be warned, Al Yavo Bechol Eis El HaKodesh, because it's going to wear off the opportunity to be inspired. You're going to wear off your opportunity to really be moved by what it is that you see. And therefore, he says, this is something that we all need to think about. This is something that we all need to consider in so many different areas of our lives. So I mention this, as we said, because Yom Yerushalayim is a time that we celebrate the gift of Yerushalayim and what it means to all of us. And you ask yourself, if I lived 100 years ago and somebody would tell me that we would have Yerushalayim, I would say, it's a dream that will never come true in my lifetime. And yet, it has come true. And although it has come true and we're so lucky to be living that dream, we need to resensitize ourselves to what it means to be a part of that reality. So let's begin with the following. What is it about the Makom HaMikdash? What is it about specifically the Kotel that is significant to us? It's a wall. After all, it's a wall. And the truth is, when there was a commission that was put together in the days of Rav Kook to discuss the status of the Kotel and what should be done with it, there were discussions back and forth. One of the members of the commission went to Rav Kook and he said, what are you getting so carried away? It's just a wall. It's a pile of stones. Just take it easy. What's everyone getting so touchy about? It's not even a building. There's nothing there. And Rav Kook said, I'll explain to you the difference. Rav Kook said, Yesh levavot shehem avanim. Some people's hearts are like stones. V'yesh avanim shehem levavot. And there are some stones in the world that represent thousands of years of Jewish hearts. And that, said Rav Kook, is why we take this place so seriously. This is a representation of the dreams, of the tears, of all those years that we've been looking forward to be back in this place. That is what those stones represent, and that's why it is significant to us. So it's a beautiful story, but the truth is the Medrash already tells us that it's not just a beautiful story, there's more to it than that. It's not just that it represents our feelings and all of the tears and all of the yearning of Jews throughout all the years of exile. It's so much more than that, says the Medrash as follows. And this is in number Ches on the source sheet. A Medrash in Shmos Rabba Amar Rav Acha. We have an assumption that although the Beis HaMikdash may have been destroyed, although we don't have the opportunity to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu the way we are supposed to and to be in Eretz Yisrael the way we're supposed to be, says the Medrash, we have an assumption that we assume that at that wall, the Shechina is still present. Even though the Beis HaMikdash is not there, Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, Dome Dodi Litzvi, my beloved, who is a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is considered like a Tzvi, Hine Zeh Omed Achar Kasleinu. We'll get back to that pasuk at the end of the shir, but for now, the Medrash says that we have a tradition that God has never left, and that His presence always can be felt there. I think if you go with sincerity, and you're not looking after little kids who are running around there, I think when you come to this place, you feel the presence of Shechina far more profoundly than you do in a shul. I don't think this medrash is just left up to our imagination. It's the reality, and we all know it's true. If you're focused on what you're supposed to be doing there, you feel the presence of the Shekhinah very, very profoundly. The Maharal Diskin, who lived in the 1800s, he passed away in 1898. So he originally was a Rav in Lumja and in Brisk, and ultimately he became the Rav of Yerushalayim. The Maharal Diskin, even though he was the Rav of Yerushalayim, it is told that he never went to visit the Kotel. And it's not because the Arabs didn't allow him to go. There are pictures from the 1800s of Jews going on rare occasion to visit. So why didn't the Maharal Diskin ever make it his business to go? And he said because he was afraid that he would faint if he ever had the opportunity to be in such a special place. So you can live in Yerushalayim your whole life, and you can be so attuned to what it means to be in this special place that you're afraid to go because you're not going to be able to withstand the experience. It's an amazing perspective. It's an amazing perspective. You know, it says, on the other hand, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes in one of his Svarim that there's a discussion in Shulchan Aruch. It says, if you go to the Kotel and you haven't been there in 30 days, you're supposed to rip Kriya because you see Ari Yisrael, I'm sorry, you see the Makam HaMikdash B'Churbana. This is not the way it's supposed to be. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach asked, what's the story if you live in Yerushalayim and you haven't been there within 30 days? Do we assume that, well, I'm living in Yerushalayim, so I know that it's here? Or do we assume that, no, even if you live in Yerushalayim but you don't go to the actual Makam HaMikdash once every 30 days, you would also have an obligation to rip Kriya? That's the question that he was asked. Shlomo Zalman said, I cannot understand how there could be a Jew who lives in Yerushalayim today who wouldn't be there once every 30 days. How can that be? I don't understand. Maybe if you live in Tel Aviv and it's a whole trip for you is one story. But you live in Yerushalayim, you can't figure out how to get yourself there once every 30 days. It was like too foreign for him to imagine this consideration. So it's important that we think about what the experience is supposed to mean to us. But what I'd like to talk about today is more of the halachos that we need to consider when we visit the Makom HaMikdash. So question number one that we need to ask ourselves, and it sounds like a fairly simple question that we all know the answer to, but in fact it was very heavily debated over a period of about 100 years. So the question that we need to ask is, this wall that we refer to as the Kotel HaMa'aravi, is that considered a wall of the perimeter of the Har HaBayis? Or is that considered to be a wall of the Beis HaMikdash itself that is still standing? Any thoughts? All those who believe it's a wall of the Beis HaMikdash, raise your hands. Don't be embarrassed, it's okay. There's no right or wrong answer, or maybe. All those who believe it's the wall of the perimeter of the Har HaBayis, raise your hands. Okay, so we are accustomed to assume that this is a wall of the Har HaBayis today, and this is the outer perimeter of the entire mountain, but not so simple. So number one, what's the difference? Why do we even have this discussion? This is a major consequence, and we'll explain as follows. Let's explain. We have two categories of tumah that the Chumash describes. One is a tumah hayotze alav migufo. One is when a person has some sort of emission from their body, and that could be both men and women, can become tameh with a tumah hayotze alav migufo. That is considered to be a very high and strict level of tumah. Then you have the secondary level of tumah, which is if I come in contact with a dead body. Either I touch a dead body directly, which is unusual, unless you're in the Chevra Kadisha, or if you are in the same room as a dead body, if you've ever attended a funeral or you go to a cemetery, you are now considered to be a tameh meis. It's not because something came out, it's not an intrinsic tumah, it's something that's extrinsic. It's because I came in contact with something else that is defiled, that is tameh. And therefore, it has made me tameh. Those are two levels of tumah. Tumah yotze ala migufo, when somebody has an emission from their body, both men and women, we assume that that is considered to be a very serious level of tumah, and therefore that person is not allowed to go into the Beis HaMikdash, and not even allowed to be on the Har HaBayis. Somebody who has come in contact with a dead body, however, is not allowed to enter the Beis HaMikdash itself, but is allowed to be on the Har HaBayis, as long as they go to the mikveh, obviously. They are allowed to be on the Har HaBayis. So here's the question. Are we considering ourselves to be, when we go to the Kotel, are we on the Har HaBayis and standing at the wall of the Beis HaMikdash itself? Or do we assume that we're standing outside of the Har HaBayis and this is the wall that protected the entire mountain? That's the question, and this was extremely heavily debated, and it will make a difference for all of us. Do we even have a right to approach the wall or not? So let's see. This was a very big issue, a very contentious issue, but the Tzitz Eliezer writes in his tshuva really a summary of the whole debate. So we're not going to go through everything, but the Tzitz Eliezer just gives us the bottom line here. So let's see. Number Yud on the bottom of the page. We're told the following. Pukhazi ad kama hislaptu gedolei hadora shelefanenu kedei lidchos tainos hama'orim shel chachmei hatorah. There were those who argued you're not even allowed to stand next to the wall. Why not? Maybe this is actually the wall of the Beis HaMikdash itself. And it turns out that you're standing on the Har HaBayis itself, which as we mentioned, would not be allowed for somebody who has a Tumah HaYotze Alav Migufo. So he said, this was a major, major debate. Are you allowed to go at all or not? Look after the parentheses. Amnam. Binoger le kotel hamaravi, he says, let's just get down to the bottom line. And that is, when we talk about the wall itself, kvar nimnu vigamru, we came to a consensus. She'enenu mikosel ha'azara ki imkosel harabais. We have an assumption today, although it was very heavily debated for a long time, we have an assumption today that this really is not a remnant of the Beis HaMikdash itself, but it is rather the outer wall of the perimeter of the harabais, and therefore we are safe. Ukedekose b'sefer avoda tama sharbeis. Hayu poze mikarav anashim ne'emane v'nechbadim v'tamide chachamim mirushalayim. They were great Jews who came to Yerushalayim uvesocham ayamuf legado b'Torah v'dibarti imam odos hakosel ha'maravi v'kulam pe'echad anu v'yamru. I discussed this issue with them, with these great Tamini Chachamim, and I asked them, what is the status of this wall? And they said, she'en lehem shum safek ka'es, the way things are today, we have no doubt, hu muska meitzokulam beit svarim ashkenazim, she'hakosel ha'maravi eino lo min ha'heichel v'lo min ha'azara rak meharabais. So, we're pretty safe. We're pretty safe. That should be the end of the discussion because we've ruled out the possibility of this being a wall of the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore we don't assume that when we enter, when we approach the wall, we are actually going onto the Har HaBayis, so we don't have to be careful whether or not we are Tahor or Tameh at the time. A person has a right to go, whether they are pure or impure at that time, it makes no difference. So far, so good. However, it's not so simple. Because even if we have adopted this position, which I assume all of us in the room have adopted, that this is really the perimeter of the Har HaBayis, there is an additional consideration that you need to keep in mind. We have an age-old practice. Where it started is a very good question. But we have an age-old practice that people visit the Makom HaMikdash and they put notes into the wall. Now this is a very good question on a number of levels. What's with the notes in the wall? So it's a good question. But before we get to the notes in the wall, even if you don't write notes, sometimes people stand there and they put their hands not just on it, but sometimes they put their hands in a crack somewhere. So sometimes you do it just because you're being pushed and you don't want to fall down. So that's a question. And why is that a question? Because we have a pasuk where we're told the following. B'chol kodesh lo siga. If you have somebody who's tamei, we're told you're not allowed to touch something that is kodesh, that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. Ve'el HaMikdash lo tavo. Two prohibitions in the pasuk. Number one, you're not allowed to touch kachim, a karban. Number two, you're not allowed to enter into the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara in Zvachim Daf Lamed Beis has a discussion. Do we say that these two phrases in the pasuk have some sort of connection to each other? Meaning, do we assume that the same way, when I tell you you're not allowed to touch something, does it mean you're just not allowed to touch it like this? Every single particle of the item is not allowed to be in your hands, or when I say don't touch, it means don't even go like this. Don't put your hand on it. Don't touch it. Right? So touch means don't touch. When I say to you, please do not come in, sounds like a childish question, but it makes a difference here. When I say to you, please do not come in, what do we mean when we say don't come in?
Stay out.
Stay out, that's true. So obviously it means I don't want your presence in this room. But what if you stick your hand through the window? Is that called coming in? Not really. Arguable, right? So you'll say, what's the difference? It makes a big difference. The Torah has a pasuk here where we're told, B'chol kodesh lo siga, somebody whose tummy is not allowed to touch a karban, or you will defile the karban. And number two, somebody whose tummy is not allowed to enter the Beis HaMikdash. Maybe, the same way, says the Gemara, the same way that we assume you're not allowed to touch even partially, so too you're not allowed to enter even partially. That's the discussion that the Gemara has. The same way you're not allowed to touch partially, you're not allowed to enter partially. And that's what we refer to as bia b'miktsas. If you do a partial entry into the Beis HaMikdash when you are tameh, is that called shma bia? Is that called an entry? Or do you say, no, until I stand with my entire body in the Beis HaMikdash, I am not called a person who has entered into this place and I have not violated anything. That's the discussion that the Gemara has. Bia b'miktsas, shma bia, or lab shma bia. It's a big discussion, a machlokas between Rabbi Abohu and Reish Lakish. We don't need to go through all the details, but that is basically the discussion that the Gemara has. It turns out to be a machlokas, the Rambam and the Ravid. How do we paskin? Do we assume that you're allowed to enter partially when you're tamei, or do we say no? You're not allowed to enter at all. Even sticking your finger in would be a problem, and therefore we get to this discussion. Even though we all agree that the Harabayis, the perimeter of it has this wall, and therefore we're all safe. If you want to go daven there, you don't have to make sure that you're tahar, because you're not entering into the Shetach Harabayis. The question now becomes, if I'm going to stick my fingers in, is that considered like a partial entry? Is that considered like a partial entry? And the consequence of that is, there's a chi of kares for somebody who enters into the Harabayis and they are tameh. So this is not just a discussion that is a nice, interesting conversation. It's something that has a major, major consequence as to how you understand this issue. A further part of the discussion is, even if you say that partial entry is called entry, and therefore you have to be careful, maybe, says the Gemara, ovi hachoma, the thickness of the wall, if I stick my hand through the entire wall, which I don't think you can do, I don't think there's any place, because then they would just stick a gun through there and start shooting people. So there's no such way to do that, and I think the stones are extremely wide. But if there would be a way that a person could stick their hand all the way through, then maybe that's a discussion that you can have. But here, if it's just in the thickness of the wall, again, this is all part of the contributing factors of this discussion, and therefore we have to ask ourselves, are we even, when we go to visit, are we allowed to stick our hands in the wall, or perhaps are we touching upon something that is a potential chi of karis? You got to be careful. So let's see. There's a Sefer Mishkanos La'avir Yaakov. This is a number 11. And there he quotes a passage from the Aderes. Who was the Aderes? The Aderes was a great man, and I find sometimes that he gets shortchanged because he had a very famous son-in-law. Just because somebody has a famous son-in-law doesn't mean that they're not famous themselves. The Aderes was a great person. And his name was Rav Eliyahu David Rabinowitz Teumim. Later on in life, Rav Kook's second wife was his daughter. So he became super famous because Rav Kook was his son-in-law. But he was famous on his own right. He was the Av Beis Din in Panevish for 19 years. And then there was a very sad story. He moves to Yerushalayim because he was invited to be the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. Problem was, he was invited by Rav Shmuel Salant, who was 90 years old. And they realized, we need an assistant rabbi because at some point the 90-year-old Rav Shmuel Salant is not going to be able to do his job anymore. So they bring the Aderes from Panevish, from Europe, to come travel to Yerushalayim. This was his dream. He finally gets a job. He moves to Yerushalayim. He's all excited. Along the way, he lost, I think, two or three children who died because of the illness and the traveling. It was a terrible story. But anyway, the Aderes gets to Yerushalayim. He's very excited about this job. And he ends up passing away before Shmuel Salant died. So he never even became the rabbi. So he was an assistant rabbi his whole life in Yerushalayim, and never ended up becoming the real rabbi. So that's the story with the Aderes, but he was an amazing personality. He was a great person. And the Aderes is quoted as saying the following, Kol yarei v'charei l'dvar Hashem. Those who are careful, bevada yachush lenafsho shelo yoshid gam etzba achas ben sedek hakotel hamaravi. Said the Aderes as the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, I would advise that people should be very careful not to even stick their fingers in the wall. Lebayikashel chalila besafik iser Torah. Because as we mentioned, even though we have all assumed that this is the outer perimeter of the Har HaBayis, there is an ensuing discussion that we need to consider. And that is, what about the fact that Bia B'miktzas, that a partial entry, might already be considered entering, and therefore you already have a problem. Says the Aderes, this is something we need to be careful about. The Maharil Diskin said the same thing, and the Chazon Ish writes the same thing. This was the opinion of many. Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes in his Tshuva, this is all very nice, but he says, I've never seen anyone that's careful about this. Says Reb Shlomo Zalman, why people aren't careful about it, I don't know. But he says, look around the world and you'll see 99% of the people who go to visit this place don't seem to have an issue with it. Now says Reb Shlomo Zalman, does that prove that it's right? Maybe yes, maybe no. But says Reb Shlomo Zalman, this is an issue to consider, but he says, I don't see that everybody is so careful about it. Now, where does this whole idea of writing notes come from in the first place? So the first mention that we have of writing any letters comes from the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh. The Aruch Chaim HaKadosh was Reb Chaim ben Attar, lived in the end of the 1600s, and he passed away in 1743, 44, something like that. So Reb Chaim ben Attar has the following story. Now, how do I know the story? Because it's printed in the introduction to the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh on Chumash. So the story goes as follows. Story was, there was a Jew who had very bad mazel. And he was a very poor Jew, and he comes to the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh and he starts talking to him about all the issues that he's having. And he says he doesn't have a parnasa, and because of that he's out on the streets, he can't really find a house to live in, and because of that his family can't buy any food, and it was a terrible situation. So he goes to the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh and he asks him for a bracha. Aruch Chaim HaKadosh gives him a bracha, but this person said, a bracha is not enough. I need more than that. I've gotten so many brachas in my life, it's not helping. So after a lot of coercion, the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh finally sits down, and he writes him a letter. And he says, next time you travel to Yerushalayim, I want you to take this letter. I wrote a letter to God himself. I want you to take this letter and put it into the Kotel. This is the first mention that we have of such an idea, that the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh writes a letter. In the end, this Jew was so excited, the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh wrote a letter for him. So he right away gets on his, I don't know what they traveled in back then, and he gets on whatever it is, and he starts traveling to Yerushalayim, and he's all excited, he's going to bring this letter, and along the way, it seems that there was some kind of terrible hurricane, stormy winds, and his hat blew off, and his jacket is falling off of him, and everything is falling apart, and he doesn't realize that the note that he was holding inside of his hat falls out, blows away, and he's devastated. And he's devastated. This is the letter from the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh. Am I ever going to get another one? Aruch Chaim HaKadosh is going to write a second letter. Later on, they found this note from the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh in his own handwriting. They found it in the streets of Yerushalayim. Later on doesn't mean the 1900s. They found it back then. And it then became public. I think it was supposed to be a private letter, but somebody found it, and it became public what this letter said. And the letter said the following. Very simple. Achosi, it's so beautiful. Achosi, Rayasi, Yonasi, Samasi. Here it is, number Yud Beis. The Aruch Chaim HaKadosh is talking directly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's talking the way a husband and wife would write letters to each other. And the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh says, I'm going to use all the expressions from Shir HaShirim because that's what I feel. So says the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, I ask you, my beloved, Avakshecha Berachamim, I ask you because we are so close and I love you so much, I ask for your mercy. Lahashpia parnasa tova leploni ben ploni, I ask that you give a parnasa to this poor man whose whole life is falling apart. V'chasam alav shemo HaKadosh Chaim Moshe ben Attar. You know what you learn from this letter? Sometimes it's not about how many words you say. One line is the whole letter of the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh. Sometimes less is more. And this is a beautiful letter. So some argue, you see, from the fact that the wind blew it away, that God isn't happy with letters. And others say, you see, from the fact that it was found, and obviously if the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh wrote it in the first place, it must be that it's an okay thing to do. Okay, you can interpret it either way, I have no idea. But Reb Nevenzel talks about this issue. Reb Nevenzel is the Rav of the Old City in Yerushalayim, the great Talmud of Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. And Reb Nevenzel writes that he has three reasons why he was never a fan of people writing letters. Number one, he says, as we discussed, perhaps bia b'miktzah shma bia. You have to be concerned that maybe a partial entry is considered entering. And therefore, we're not careful about tumah today. We don't go to the mikveh every time we visit there. And therefore, he says, you have to be concerned that maybe sticking your finger in when you're putting the note in is already going to be something that would be a violation of the law of El HaMikdash Lo Savo. Number one. Number two, he says, one is never allowed to use property of the Beis HaMikdash for our own purposes. That's called an Isser of Mi'ila. So let's say one day I'm making soup at home and I realize that I ran out of pots and I don't know what to use. I happen to be a Kohen. I'm just coming back from my shift in the Beis HaMikdash. You know what? We're at the end of the day already. We don't need the pots till tomorrow. Take a pot home, cook the soup, put it away in a Tupperware or whatever it is, put it in the fridge, and I'll bring the pot back clean tomorrow. Don't worry, I'm not going to ruin it. And if I do, I'll buy a new one. Do I have a right to do it, says the Gemara? Did I say something wrong?
No.
I think it's what you do. So why am I not allowed to do that? Hektish is not losing out. The pot won't get ruined. If it gets ruined, I'll give it another one. Zeh nehenev zeh lo chaser, the Gemara says, there's a concept in halacha where somebody uses something, it doesn't depreciate in value, I get a lot of benefit, you have no loss, so let me use it. Says the Torah, absolutely not. This is hekdesh. This belongs to the property of God. And you cannot use God's own property for yourself. That's called an isser me'ila. So much so, the Gemara goes so far in Brachas Daf Lamed Hey. The Gemara says, how do you know that you need to make a bracha before you eat anything in the world that you're going to consume? Says the Gemara, because our entire world belongs to God. Who gave you a right to take anything from this world and have benefit from it? Who gave you a right to have pleasure? The bracha is what gives you the allowance to use it in the first place. Otherwise, you violate the Isra of Me'ila, says the Gemara. It's an amazing concept. The bracha is what gives us an allowance to use everything in this world, but without that, everything belongs to God Himself, and therefore, says Rav Nevinsal, the same way you're not allowed to take a pot from the Beis HaMikdash to cook your soup at home, so too, who said you're allowed to use the stones of Hekdesh for your own purposes? You have a letter that you want to write, you have a sitter that you want to hold, so you're going to lean it on the Makom HaMikdash itself for your own purposes because you're too lazy to hold it with your own hands? Says Rav Nevinsal, that's consideration number two. You're using this as a holding ground for your own personal purposes. And that's potentially an Isser Me'ila. Fascinating consideration. But number three, says Rav Nevinsal, leaving all this aside, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Shomea Tefila. The Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't need our love letters. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to hear our voices. You know, I always say, sometimes young couples come to talk to us, I say, imagine, instead of being expressive to your spouse, you just leave a note on the bed, says, have a wonderful day, I'll talk to you next week. Right? Like, you know? And you never call and you never check in. How would that make your spouse feel? It's a very dysfunctional relationship that you can't talk to each other. And then the next day she leaves a note on your bed that says the same. It's a very strange relationship. Well, says Reb Nevinsel, you can't figure out how to express yourself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Doesn't even have to be in Hebrew, he says. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Shomea Tefila. The Ribbono Shel Olam hears us. Speak to him in English. Talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu like you actually care about him. Talk to him as if you really want to have a relationship with him. And says Rav Nevinsal, why would you give up on that opportunity if you're finally coming to a place where you have the opportunity to connect with God in the most profound way? Why would you waste it on a note? Why would you write it down? You're like the spouse that leaves a note on the bed instead of communicating with the spouse directly. Says Rav Nevinsal, it's for these three reasons that he was never a proponent of the letter writing that many, many people do. And I think it's an eye-opening conversation. It gives us the opportunity to refocus again on why are we here? You know, some people sit and spend so much time figuring out what am I going to write on the letter? Just offer a tefillah. If only we thought so much before we davened Shemona Esrei, when we went to daven there, we would be in a better place also. Forget about the notes. Not making light of it. But if you have the opportunity to do one of the two, put more focus and more attention on the tefillah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Shomea Tefillah. So as we mentioned, The Medrash writes that we started with, if you look at the beginning of the source sheet, the Medrash writes, Hine ze omed achar kaslenu, mashgiach min achalanos, meitzitz min hacharakim. That, says the Medrash, is a reference to the remnant of the Har Habayis that we have today, to the Kotel HaMaravi. What does this pasuk mean? The Bali Musar asks, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter points out, what is the difference between somebody who is mashgiach min hachalonos or meitzitz min hacharakim? What's the difference between those two? A chalon is a window. A window means when I look through the window, I can see you and you can see me. We can each see each other. What happens when I look through a peephole? So normally, when you look through the charakim, when you look through a little crack in a wall, only the person who's actually standing next to the wall and looking through can see. The one who's in the distance is unable to see. Writes Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, this is what we mean. In the times of a Beis HaMikdash, we'd had a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which was Mashgiach Min HaChalanos. We felt His presence, He felt ours, we saw each other. We felt the overwhelming presence of the Shekhinah in our lives every moment of the day. Every day of our lives. We understood what it meant to be looked after by Avinu Shebashamayim. That's Mashgiach Min HaChalonos. Unfortunately then, we experienced a Churban. So what happens when you have a Churban? Says the Gemara, there's a Mechitza Shal Barzel. There's a iron curtain, so to speak, that's been put up. Bein Yisrael le'avihem shabashamayim. And some of us believe God is out of the picture. There's no hashgacha anymore. What happened to Him? If He cared enough about His people, He would save us. He would take us out of galus. And He hasn't. So what's happening? Right, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, never forget the last phrase in that pasuk. Yes, it's true, in some generations we have the opportunity to experience God as Mashgiach min achalonos, that God is actually looking through the window, we see Him and He sees us. But in the other generations, like we live today, we have HaKadosh Baruch Hu who is Meitzitz min hacharakim. God is always watching over us. Unfortunately, during this generation, we cannot always see it. Like the person who looks through the little crack in the wall. If they put their face straight up to the crack, they can see through. But those of us who are standing on the periphery, those of us who are standing in a distance, are unable to see that anyone's watching anything. Says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, never forget that in all generations, Eine Hashem Elokecha Ba Mereishis Hashana Adach Rishana. God watches over us. God looks over everything that happens in our world all the time. Our relationship may not be as close as it used to be. And what we daven for is V'sechazena einenu b'shuvcha l'tzion b'rachamim. We ask that our eyes should be able to see. We know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that You're here. We ask, like the Navi says, Ki ayin ba'ayin yiru b'shuv Hashem tzion. What does that mean? Rabbi Yisrael Salanter doesn't say it, but I think it's obvious. We ask that HaKadosh Baruch Hu once again should meet up with our eye. We should be in that relationship of Mashgiach min achalonos, that we should see Him, that He should see us. Ki ayin ba'ayin yiru v'sechazena einenu. Our perception should be one where we see the Ribono Shel Olam clearly. But until then, never forget the fact that He is still meitzitz min hacharakim. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still looking through the cracks and still paying attention to all that goes on in our world. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu always will look after us and will continue to be the one who cares for Klal Yisrael. We may not always see it begali, we may not always see it so openly and profoundly like we used to, but this is a reality that we live with. Yes, we're gullus Jews, and we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, and we daven for it every day of our lives. We daven for the return to Yerushalayim, for the return to Tzion, for our return out of gullus, and that we should have this new experience of what it means to be the nation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, living with Him all the time, but until then, we still always need to remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Meitzitz Min HaCharakim. And that, says the Medrash, is the tradition that we have, Me'olam Lo Zaza Shechina Mikosel HaMaravi, can always be assured that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence can be found in that very special and holy place. Af al pi, says the Rambam, even though the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Shechina eina betela liyolam. Says the Rambam, it doesn't matter how many enemies have come and tried to destroy us, God's Shechina can never be destroyed and it will always be there for all eternity. And that, says the Rambam, is something that we always can take comfort in. The fact that we always have a place to go back to, and we always have the opportunity to connect to that once again. But yet we daven that we should have the full connection. B'sechazena einenu b'shuvcha l'tzion berachamim. Ki ayin ba'ayin yiru b'shuv Hashem tzion. That's what we daven for. That is what we celebrate as we understand this incredible gift of Yerushalayim. And once again, we have the opportunity to be such a blessed generation. Let us never take advantage. Let us never take for granted what it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has blessed our generation with. Let us appreciate everything that it means to us. Let us understand that this is a dream of our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents for thousands of years. And it's the reality that we are so privileged to live. Just to make two announcements again. For those who want to join the WhatsApp group, you can talk to me afterward. And for those who were not here in the beginning, next week will be our final shiur in this series. And we'll pick up once again on July 8th.